Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a recording of our Thursday evening Dhamma class from Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey, on July 12, 2018. My Dhamma talk and our Sangha discussion is on the Kalama Sutta. In this sutta, the Buddha teaches a confused group how to determine an authentic and useful Dhamma. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace. So the Kalama Sutta is a sutta about I guess one way of saying it is how not to get confused in the Dhamma practice, and the Dhamma itself provides that, but also how to distinguish this Dhamma practice, what the Buddha taught, from everything else that's out there. And of course that was the it's a common problem today, but it was just as common during the Buddha's time. And I was thinking, the three here tonight, there's two or three people online, your exposure to Buddhism mostly came through the Buddha's direct teachings. So this might not be all that relevant to you, except maybe one part of this. But it is a common problem. It's something I went through for many, many years. And going from one lineage to another, one method to another, all claiming that they are the one true Dhamma practice, or at least their variants that the Buddha taught. In other words, the Buddha, in order for that to be true, the Buddha would have to have taught numerous paths to awakening, and often they're very contradictory. So it leaves you very confused. And there's one particular line in here that has been taken out of context and used to justify changing anything and everything in the Buddha's practice and still calling it Buddhism and claiming the Buddha taught to do this. And that line in this sutta, I'll read the whole line or the whole context in just a couple of minutes. But it's often taught that the Buddha taught that we should question everything. And if we don't like what we're hearing, we can adapt it or dismiss it entirely. And I remember the first time I heard someone teaching and referencing the Kalama Sutta. This is going back at least 25 years. And he referenced the Kalama Sutta, but referenced that line and took it out of context, saying, well, the Buddha said that we should question everything. And then he went on. This was a very well-known monk. And then went on to say and justify the adaptations he's made to the Buddha's teachings. And I remember thinking, wait a minute, if that's true, why should I follow this at all? And why should I listen to this guy? Because I didn't agree with him. And why would I rest what I thought was my whole future well-being on a teacher, now I'm talking about the Buddha, who said, this is what I teach, but you don't have to follow it. But it just didn't make any sense. And then I thought a little bit further and realized that an awakened human being never would have said that. He never would have taught that way. He never would have been that dismissive to people that he was trying to teach. And imagine the at least the hidden arrogance that would result in that statement. Somebody who has a bunch of people, the Buddha often taught thousands and thousands of people at one time, and then telling them, you know, what I'm teaching doesn't really mean that much. You can do whatever you want, but this is what I say. It just hit me the wrong way, but it led me to start questioning what was being presented to me as Buddhism. And that eventually led me to the suttas, which is where you find the Kalama Sutta. And another thing is there's a very, very well-known world-renowned, I won't say who it is, who uses this misapplication of the Kalama Sutta just that way. And he has created, again, a worldwide sangha. There's thousands and thousands of followers, and I'm not putting them down, except he justifies all the changes that he's made to the Dhamma by saying the Buddha said we should do this. And again, you'll see what the Buddha means by questioning everything. You know, and the last thing I have to say, again, I know this is kind of out of context for you because you haven't been distracted by all the different Buddhist practices. There was another sex scandal arose within a very famous Buddhist lineage, and it got me to think. In fact, I'm writing an article about this. There's hardly a modern Buddhist lineage that doesn't have a sex scandal in that lineage. And they're often dismissed by, well, the teacher was a great teacher, but he was still a human being. To me, if a teaching is authentic, it wouldn't allow a senior person to act in such very, very hurtful ways. And it's by taking license with what the Buddha teaches that allows someone to hold themselves out as a Buddhist teacher and act in such an extremely hurtful way. And this, you know, the latest scandal is just like many of the others. Getting to the Kalama Sutta. The Buddha was walking with a large group from the Sangha. They arrived at Kesaputta, the town of the Kalamas. The Kalamas have heard that the Buddha was an awakened human being who teaches a complete path that is admirable in the beginning, in the middle, and in its conclusion. What that line means, and the Buddha references that I teach a Dhamma that is admirable in the beginning, the middle, and in its conclusion. It means that it's a complete and a pure practice. There's nothing that you can find in it that distracts from the purpose of awakening. The Kalamas went to the Buddha and told him of the many teachers that come through their town, all claiming have taught the one true Dhamma, while ridiculing other teachers and their teachings. How are we to know which is a useful and effective Dhamma and what is not? It's a reasonable question, isn't it? When you have, and that town Kesaputta was on a major trade route. So there were always people coming in and out of that town, and it was a common practice that if you had something you wanted to sell, including a Dhamma practice, you were the best one at it. That's how you presented yourself. The Buddha replies, of course you are uncertain and filled with doubt. When there are reasons for doubt or uncertain, when there are reasons for doubt, uncertainty will follow. Do not go by reports or legends or traditions or scripture or conjecture or inference or analogies or common agreement or unexamined loyalty. And that's all what's present with modern Buddhism. And often the continued excuse is that we all believe in it, or at least it's accepted because there's so many people doing something, even though there's a lot of conjecture in there. When you know from your own experience that the qualities taught are unskillful, shameful, confusing, and distracting, these teachings should be abandoned. So that the word the Buddha often used referring to how to engage in his own Dhamma is ehapasika, meaning you have to come and see for yourself and experience for yourself. The Buddha is not teaching to take anything on faith and know from your direct experience whether it is effective. But he's also applying that same rule to other teachings. If you know from your direct experience of it that it's confusing or misleading or creates additional stress in your life, then you know it's not for you. When these teachings are criticized by the wise, they should be abandoned. So this is something that I come up against often, and people object when I point out the differences between what the Buddha taught, which I'm doing tonight, and what has developed in the 2600 years since the Buddha's passing. Well, this is something. The Buddha spent nearly as much time teaching what his Dhamma wasn't as what it is because of this ongoing problem. People would come to him confused, or he would see them even within his own Sangha adapting practices and doing this right in front of him that weren't part of his Dhamma. And of course, out of great compassion and courage, he would say, wait a minute, that's not what I teach. This is what I teach. And that is as important. And as he says here, It's known and criticized by the wise, meaning the wise that have developed the heart root of the Dhamma, have developed the Eightfold Path. How else could you know? When these teachings lead to harm and suffering, they should be abandoned. Relate that to what I started with today. All the sex scandals and the hurt that has happened from very, very famous teachers, and yet people, rather than recognizing that Dhamma or Dharma cannot possibly be useful or couldn't lead to that type of behavior, they excuse it away. If you remember how this important sutta, if you heard it the way it was meant to be heard and understood, you would recognize immediately that this is not something that any human being who cares for their own well-being and others should follow. And I don't mean to be on my grandstand, but this is something that's been coming more and more to a head, unfortunately. Almost every day you hear about this now. The Buddha continues, so what do you think, Kalamas? When the three defilements of greed, aversion, and deluded thinking arise in a person, do they arise for benefit or for harm? The defilements always bring harm, they respond. And when a person is driven by the defilements, their mind possessed, They kill other beings. They take what is not given. They take another spouse, talking about what's going on in modern Buddhism. They lie and induce others to lie. There's a whole, I shouldn't go too deep into this, but there's a whole council that in this one major religion that finally disbanded their themselves. And they finally admitted just this, that they've been inducing other people to lie. And this is, the sex scandals began not just with this current teacher, they go back to the founder of, and this goes back at least 40 years. And they were inducing other people to lie. And again, I'm overemphasizing this, maybe I'm overemphasizing it, but just to make the point that the Buddha taught a pure and compassionate and completely harmless Dhamma. And if there's anything within any teaching that leads to harm to other people, it should be questioned. And we shouldn't induce others to lie simply to protect that. The Buddha continues, all of this creates long-term harm and suffering for themselves and others. So what do you think, Kalama? Are these defilements skillful or unskillful? Shameful or shameless? Criticized or praised by the wise? The defilements are unskillful, shameful, and are criticized by the wise. The Buddha continues, when the defilements are acted upon, do they lead to long-term suffering for oneself or others or not? They always lead to long-term suffering for oneself and others. So as I said, do not go by reports or legends or traditions or scriptures or conjecture or inference or analogies or common agreement. How often is that, you know, because all the people we associate with are doing the same thing, it must be okay. All my friends are doing it. Or unexamined loyalty, the same thing. When you know from your own experience that the qualities taught are unskillful, shameful, confusing, and distracting, these teachings should be abandoned. So how do you know? Well, the Buddha taught the heart of the Dhamma is the Eightfold Path. And within the Eightfold Path are moral and ethical guidelines. And if you're not striving to develop right speech, right action, and right livelihood, then you're just ignoring your own ignorance and you're ignoring what caused so much suffering in your own life to begin with. And I'm not saying that for most of us, if we don't have an Eightfold Path in our lives, we're going to all be sexual predators. That's certainly not true. But it was the Eightfold Path, not just the moral and ethical aspects, that allow us to recognize and abandon behavior that's rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths, for the very practical reason to simply abandon that behavior. When these teachings are criticized by the wise, they should be abandoned. When these teachings lead to harm and suffering, they should be abandoned. Now, do not go by reports or legends or traditions or scripture or conjecture or inference or analogies or common agreement or unexamined loyalty. When you know from your own experience that the qualities taught are skillful, shameless, unambiguous, and direct, these teachings should be developed. Can you imagine if there would, could you imagine any scenario where if the Buddha acted in the way that some of the modern teachers act today, that we would be even talking about this? He would have came and went 2,600 years ago. And back then he likely would have been likely would have been put to death. People were drawn to the Buddha's Dhamma back then because of the way he carried himself, and not just his countenance. They knew that this man practiced what he preached. He lived a pure life because he had abandoned the defilements. He had put aside greed, aversion, and deluded thinking rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. That's what he described in the Nagara Sutta. When these teachings are praised by the wise, they should be developed. When these teachings lead to unbinding and calm, they should be developed. There's no unbinding and calm in much of, and I'm not just talking about Buddhism now, much of so-called spiritual practice. Most of it is agitating and further distracting. So what do you think, Kalamas? When the defilements do not arise in a person, is this for their long-term welfare and happiness, and for others' long-term welfare and happiness? They replied, well, it's for everyone's long-term welfare and happiness. And the Buddha continues, and this person, free of the defilements, does not kill living beings, or take what is not given, or take another spouse, or lie or induce others to lie. So what do you think? Are these qualities skillful, shameless, and praised by the wise? The group responds, they are, sir. When developed and acted on, they bring long-term welfare and happiness to oneself and others. There's such an important point there. When they are developed and acted on, the Dhamma is not something that's magical or mystical in any way. It's entirely practical. And we develop it through the Eightfold Path, and we act on it through the Eightfold Path. The Buddha continues, now Kalamas, one who follows the Dhamma, free of greed, aversion, or deluded thinking, alert and mindful of the Eightfold Path, experiences their life imbued with goodwill. Everywhere they go, their mindfulness is imbued with goodwill, with gratitude, with a mind resting in equanimity. They are abundant and free from all agitation towards themselves and all humanity. That's how we know that we're developing the Eightfold Path the way it's intended, because we're moving towards those qualities of mind. And most of us, that's what we talk about a lot here, the practical benefits of the Dhamma. We become more calm and peaceful with ourselves and with each other. They are abundant and free from all agitation towards themselves and all humanity. When one follows the Eightfold Path, free from greed, aversion, and deluded thinking, undefiled and pure, these are four qualities they will naturally develop. They will give rise to pleasant experiences in the present. They will give rise to pleasant experiences in the future. If harm is done with no intention, no suffering will touch them. That's such an important teaching on karma. I won't teach that tonight. If they remain harmless, then they can know that they are pure and no suffering will touch them. I've said this often. One of the most powerful understandings that I ever experienced from developing the Eightfold Path and integrating it into my life, and this happened rather quickly, was that I knew that if I was acting within the framework of the Eightfold Path, I could do no more harm towards others and towards myself. And there's so much freedom and power in that. And then you can naturally live in the world without being concerned about your intentions or what you're doing. Is it going to hurt someone? You know that your intentions are pure. How do you know? Because you've developed the Eightfold Path. And that's how we live in peace and equanimity. These are the four qualities naturally developed in one free of the defilements from following the Dhamma. They say, great teacher, you have shown a way to those who are lost. Through clear reasoning, you have made the Dhamma clear and taught us how to know a true Dhamma. We take refuge in you, the great teacher, in your Dhamma, and in your Sangha. Please remember that from this day forward, we have taken refuge, and that's taking true refuge, taking refuge in the Buddha, the fact that a human being developed this, his Dhamma, he's teaching us in a well-focused Sangha that doesn't induce others to lie. So that's the sutta. Thank you. And the way this is developed, the heartwood of the Dhamma, the way we know an authentic Dhamma practice is to practice an authentic Dhamma. And those teachings are still available to us 2,600 years later. The Sutta Pitaka has preserved the original teachings. And in this room and in this Sangha, that's all that I teach and it's all that I'll ever teach. Because of how I learned the Dhamma, because I found how important it was to stay focused and not lose my focus on developing the Dhamma because of my desire to include other practices into it, to keep it pure. And that's all the Buddha's teaching. And he always came back to, you know the Dhamma is effective through your own experience, not because someone else tells you it's a good thing to do. And I bet you would all say the same thing, that you understand that. So any questions about the Dhamma? And we'll just go around the room about this sutta. Kevin, good to see you tonight.
See you.
See you for just a minute.
I guess the analogy I would make with that is that the only other teaching formally that I had was, you know, when I was young in Christianity. Mm-hmm. There are the Ten Commandments, and if you think about it, it's okay, these are the commandments, this is the path or whatever. And they're virtuous, you know, they're important, but they're, you know, intent. But then there's also all of the magical stuff that goes with it. If you do this, then you promise that you're going to be, you know, taken care of later. And even as a little kid, I just thought, well, that I can't take that. I don't understand that, and I don't believe it. So, and I've come to Buddhism and the Dhamma way later in my life now, with some dabblings on and off through my life, but then directly to Buddha teaches. And I, in a way, I have experienced for myself increasing tranquility or increasing calmness directly. So I do understand it, and I can, I think that's what he's saying. And
oh, yeah.
I felt it.
Well, thank you for bringing that up. I was brought up in a Christian religion, and it was presented that the Ten Commandments were the most important thing to follow, and unlike what the Buddha teaches, it was never taught. The only reason that I should act in accordance with the Ten Commandments was so that I don't burn in hell, or at least spend, you know, a good amount of time in purgatory. Neither one was much fun. And there was no teaching, no useful teaching on how to develop the Ten Commandments in a real meaningful way, how to act in accordance with the Ten Commandments. The Buddha realized that that's just foolish teaching. It's magical teaching. He recognized that people are prone towards breaking the commandments because of their minds rooted in ignorance. So he taught a complete path to recognize and abandon the underlying thinking that results in hurtful behavior. And that's where you mentioned that before. The Eightfold Path includes moral and ethical teachings, but it also includes five other aspects, beginning in right view, to recognize and abandon the thinking that's underlying that poor behavior. And the reward is not some magical or mystical reward after you're dead. The reward is right here, right now, living a human life fully awakened with a mind resting in peace and equanimity. That's the reward. And the Buddha described that not as something that is granted to us or even imposed on us because we acted so wonderfully well. We develop it ourselves. He described that as becoming rightly self-awakened. He described himself as doing that, and he taught other people how to become rightly self-awakened. Frank, good to see you tonight.
Good to be here tonight. This is an interesting sutta, the Kalama Sutta. I've heard it before, and I can see the importance of it, and I'm going to have to get into it a little bit more, but I like how he kind of addresses the greed, aversion, and deluded thinking as the result of not working within the framework of the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. Like, the whole goal of the Eightfold Path and the Four Noble Truths is that the freedom from that, the defilements, and how he mentions that if that's not what you're experiencing, then abandon it. You know, and I think that that's an important part of everyday living. I mean, because that comes up every day in my life, where that is like a checkpoint for me when certain times of the day where I'm like caught up in something, where I might become deluded, where I might become, you know, caught up in something where I can catch myself and catch myself in wrong view and check the intention. Before I get into wrong speech, you know, and wrong action, and kind of like get back on the path a little bit, you know. So that's where I think the letting go of those defilements happens for me. And he mentioned in here, like, those wholesome qualities of generosity and those other principles that we don't really talk a lot about that help me stay on the path, you know. So,
thank you, Frank. Yeah, I mean, this sutta speaks right to the heart of the Dhamma and what we're hoping to develop and hoping to recognize and abandon and develop the positive qualities. And in you talking about it, you're describing how well you have integrated the entire Eightfold Path in order to do this. That's how it works. And we get to the point where we are free of greed, aversion, and any type of deluded thinking. We're seeing reality. That's a profound right view. but it's also a very simple and direct path as long as we maintain the framework of the Dhamma, the heart of the Dhamma. Thank you, Frank. Sam, good to see you tonight.
You know, it's like a competition. I feel like it's a competition, you know, for Buddhism to be like the one thing that, like, you know, is somewhat religious, practiced, you know, somewhat, you know, the path. It's like my dad just said, the Ten Commandments were a thing with Christianity. Well, the Eightfold Path is like, what is the Eightfold Path then? I understand that it's like, you know, there are guidelines and it's a certain practice and it's a certain way of practicing these types of things. But, and I hate to generalize it, but I feel like it's all redundant. It's all the same thing, just different ways of saying it. Buddha might have been, you know, a really, like, different kind of person. He might have been, like, a different, you know, he obviously taught different things in different ways. And it works better for some people than it does others.
Oh, yeah.
I'm increasingly frustrated with the concept of higher power, the concept of, you know, practicing these sort of things. Because I don't think I give myself enough of a chance, first off. I might be in a certain way right now because I do have a big change coming in my life, but I'm shaking because it's like, I'm that pissed off.
Yeah.
I am that pissed off, and it's like, and I'm trying to use right speech. That's all.
Thank you, Sam. No, you. I'm sorry you're so upset by this, and perhaps I didn't explain it as well as I hoped. I used to feel the same way, especially when I was involved in different Buddhist teachings, that even though they wouldn't mention something like a higher power, it was always kind of either covertly or overtly part of their teachings. The Buddha never taught anything about a higher power that we're hoping to appease or gain grace from or anything like that. This is all, we do this ourselves. And the difference between an Eightfold Path and something like the Ten Commandments is that it's a guideline for developing understanding, not for gaining some kind of reward in heaven or anything like that. It's just practical guidelines for living in the world, free of any dogma, free of any magical or mystical teachings, free of any appeasing of gods or disincarnate beings or anything like that. It's just practical teachings. The difficulty is that we are so conditioned to think of anything. This is what the sutta even teaches. We're conditioned to think of anything that might have a moral and ethical component as religious. And most of us who have been disappointed by religion, or even worse, have a great resistance to even this.
I'd say there's great stuff coming from every area, whether, you know, it's positive, it's like good. It's good for your mind, it's good for the body, it's good for the soul. Why do we have to focus on one thing? I've wanted to read the Bible before. I've read some of the Siddhartha book. You know, I might be uneducated, misinformed about certain things because I didn't give certain things different chances, but like, it's all the same shit. It's really all the same shit. Sorry, I'm just in a bad way.
Well,
right,
it's
now.
Okay. No, Sam, you're free to say anything you want. I would say that it's not all the same. And from my experience of getting involved in many different areas of religions, and specifically different Buddhist lineages, even taking my vows in one, that what the Buddha taught is completely different, with a different purpose and a different goal. But the only way to experience that, like the Buddha says here, is ehipasika. You have to come and see for yourself. Any other questions or comments tonight? No? Okay. I'm going to work on that. Frank brought up the difficulty with the fonts on the website, at least on his phone. So I'm going to work on that and see what that is. And I'm working to make the new app be much more useful for everyone. I think that's it. We'll finish with metta, as we always do. So find your relaxed meditation posture and gently close your eyes and gently close your mouths. And again, take a moment to become mindful of your in-breath and your out-breath. And these are the Buddha's words on metta from the Karaniya Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you all for a wonderful class. Peace. Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. I welcome your questions and comments. To contact me and for guided meditations and instructions, Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos, please visit becoming-buddha.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Peace.